The following podcast contains explicit language. It's Wednesday, September 5th, 2018, from Slate, it's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. Bob Woodward is out with a new book, and as befits one of the great practitioners of the nonfiction form, it apparently builds a fairly strong case that Donald Trump, our president, is impetuous and vacuous and angry. Inattentive, cruel, dangerous, incompetent, mucus. Let us remember mucus, our acronym for Trump's habits that most imperil the country, mentally unfit, cruel, unethical, stupid. And to that, based on Woodward's reporting, we could add easily distracted and also ineffective. That last point alone was demonstrated by the odd tape that Woodward released of his interview with President Trump about President Trump not being interviewed for his book. Ah, would that he could ward off Woodward. The Washington Post titles its annotation of this tape, quote, "The mind-blowing chat between Woodward and President Trump." Well, mind-blowing in the sense that, yeah, I can't believe this guy's president. But everything in that call was a private or semi-private reflection of everything that we always knew about Trump and a bit of what we knew about Woodward, too. Trump's staff won't let him sit down with Woodward. Probably the right move. Trump throws his staff under the bus. Says he doesn't talk to his spokesman, Raj Shah. At one point, he puts Kellyanne Conway on the phone with Woodward in what seems like a rebuke to her. And then he decides that the book is going to be critical of him. He doesn't know anything about the book. Well, first of all, how could he know? It's a book. What's he going to read a book? He probably, though, figured out that it's going to be a critical book based on two things. One, Woodward's an observant person. Two, he's been watching his presidency quite closely. He can't admit it, but he knows it. He's a terrible president. And so he says this to Woodward, and I'm going to play a little presidential call karaoke where I chime in with what I would have said or what I wish the reporter had said. Let us hear from Trump.
I'm just hearing about it, and I heard I did hear from Lindsay, but I'm just hearing about it. So we're going to have a very inaccurate book, and that's too bad.
No,
but I don't blame you entirely.
It's going to be accurate, I believe.
All right. Okay. Well, accurate is that nobody's ever done a better job than I'm doing as president. That I can tell you. So that's and that's the way a lot of people feel that know what's going on, and you'll see that over the years. But a lot of people feel that, Bob. So
a lot of people. Woodward could have said that, right? He could have said a lot of people, or he could have said, "Mr. President, nobody's ever done a better job." Let's just talk about two. Lincoln during the Civil War, Roosevelt against the Nazis. You're telling me you're better than them? Would have been nice had Woodward said that. Woodward's not going to do that. We know that he heard what Trump said. You know that he's very dissatisfied with it, but he acts all Woodward-y rather than getting on tape someone calling bullshit on Trump. But what Woodward did do, he was clearly turned off, so he ended the interview this way.
"I believe in our country, and because you're our president, I wish you good luck."
Which is known as taking the high road, which is a good intention, but I fear also, like the saying goes, might just lead us straight to hell. On the show today, I spiel about jade vaginal eggs and the celebrity who was rebuked for endorsing them. Wilford Brimley, what have you gotten yourself into this time? But first, Gary Steingart's new novel, Lake Success, starts off with a hedge fund billionaire who can't handle his son's autism. He flees New York City by bus. He's just gotten into a fight with his wife, Seema. Let me read to you from the New York Times review of this book. It was a somewhat critical review, but let me just read this, and I'm doing this to make a point about the book and also the review. So, Barry fled Manhattan after Seema called him soulless at a drunken dinner party and after she and their nanny attacked him for nearly wounding Shiva out of frustration at his condition. He walked bleeding onto his first bus. Now, here's the thing. The review gets it wrong. It's a subtle point. And in the book, Barry says over and over to himself in his head, "She called me soulless. She said I had no imagination." But the actual quote from the dinner party scene in the book is not that exactly. "I disagree," Seema said. "People in finance have no imagination. They have no soul." And I suppose you could extrapolate that insult as personal. But the point is that we have this drunken character who slightly misinterprets the comment, as we all might when we are drunk and defensive and, yeah, a little soulless. But it's this detail, this small detail, that he's driven by the fact that his wife insulted him as soulless when she never actually insulted him as soulless. It's one of these details that makes Lake Success such a good book. And as you will hear now, it makes my interview with Gary Steingart a true pleasure. The Defender is a beautiful car, but beauty is, of course, sometimes only skin deep. Not with the Defender. Let's talk about the interior. It's robust, built with integrity. Yes, it's designed iconically, the exterior. That's what compelled me. My neighbor Jay says, "Mike, you see what's on the block? It's a Defender." And I look down the block, and indeed there is. And me and Jay, the neighbor, and Michelle, we gather around the Defender. We peer in the window. I have to say, I don't want to make this a little too tawdry, but we lust, or perhaps we gvel. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. We looked at the cargo capacity, more room for the gear. There's really a wide range of adventures. The Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender. Gary Steingart is not just a novelist. He's a very funny observer of where we are today. And his new book, Lake Success, is, well, it's one of those novels that, like so many of his others, is going to take the conversation and just define the era through his observations and wit. And just, I think he's now, Gary's with me here, I think he's embracing humanity a little more than he did before. Is that fair? Hello, Gary. Thanks for joining.
Hey, how are you?
Are you? It seems like you gave your characters a little bit more of a break than you have in some of your last books.
I'll tell yous. I had a kid since my last book, so I have a 4-year-old kid. And now I have to kind of embrace humanity more because I just plan to, like,
skin in the game.
Yeah, I got skin in the game. I was just planning to die at one point,
sure,
and then leave the whole planet blazing and, you know, just self-destructing. Mm-hmm. It was cool with me. I'd be like, All right, last one out.
But what unfortunate timing that the kid comes right before the Trump election. No, had you known.
I know. I'm serious about that. Had I known, like, what would I have done? You know, and I'm somebody who grew up in a totalitarian country, the Soviet Union, and my parents were smart enough to get me the hell out of there. So, you know, will I know when to leave? You know,
well, that's your answer. Yeah. I mean, if totalitarianism inhibits the Steingart's procreation, there would be no you.
Yeah.
I think it's negatively correlated.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes totalitarianism makes it sexy. You know, you're like, oh, well, yeah, you know, it's a screw you to the system in a literal way.
There are stakes.
Yeah, there are stakes.
I once read a book called Sexual Relations in the Former Soviet Union, and it was basically, the subtitle could have been Stupping Outside.
Yeah.
Because that's basically what had to happen.
That's right. Everyone lived in these tiny apartments they shared with 9 other families, so stupping outside, you know, and given the cold, a risky proposition, but a lot of people got born that way.
Now, this guy, Barry, your protagonist, he should be really unsympathetic in a lot of ways, but I think I have a couple of observations about him and how he differs from your other protagonists. One is this. He seems to be physically more attractive than he was. Is that true?
Yes. He's my first decent-looking protagonist.
Broad shoulders, he's got
a swimmer's build. A woman mistakes him for Jon Stewart at one point. I'm not sure that's a huge compliment, but I think, yeah, probably.
In our world of clever Jews.
Yeah, he's a hot-looking, clever Jew. So, yeah, I mean, that was... he is by far my most attractive protagonist.
And there are plot reasons for that, which is, you know, he has to get with a couple characters along the way, and it maybe wouldn't make sense if people didn't know he was rich and still found him attractive.
Right, he can't reveal that he's rich, so, you know, so he... And he's traveling by Greyhound, so everyone assumes he's one of them. Fairly impoverished, so having a nice punim, as they say, is very helpful. Yeah.
When you're writing, do you have the character physically in mind, or can you go pages without saying, oh, this is how the world would react to him based on what he looks?
It's interesting because most of my characters sort of look, you know, like a Nebuchadnezzar version of me, except for Misha Weinberg in Absurdistan, who was 400 pounds. So I kept having to think, what would I be like if I had 400 pounds? In fact, as I was writing that book, I was living in Rome and I ate so much the way an actor prepares to just be bigger so that I could write from that perspective. But here...
I, I compliment your commitment to that.
Thank you. I am the hardest working man in literature. Yeah, but here it was different because I did have to remind myself that he's not the typical Steingartian hero, if I may use that word.
You're allowed to.
I guess I am.
You of all get permission.
Me of all people can use Steingartian, but at the same time, he suffers from a lot of the ennui and anxiety and all the other crap that Steingartian heroes suffer from. So even though on the outside he may look better, inside he's the usual cauldron of despair.
And a lot of the ennui that Steingartian heroes suffer from is economic. And you'd think he might not have one if you didn't know the world of hedge funds, where being worth $50 million is just cause for more anxiety.
Oh, God, no. He sucks. I mean, having $50 million is a joke. And I think, Barry knows it. He wishes he was a lot more successful. Because, in the hedge fund world, having money, I mean, what is it worth? After a certain amount of money, none of it really matters. Mm-hmm. The only goal people really want is to have their own jet, which does require a more substantial outlay.
There are maybe an NFL team.
There's a couple more aspirational things. But really, the jet is the final sort of statement, unless you like sports so much. So he knows he's not that great, and I think it weighs on him. And in this world, the money basically shows you that you're right and somebody else is wrong, because there's always a party and a counterparty to every trade. And you want to be the correct one. And so to them, it's a huge ego. Having only $50 million would be a huge ego blow to many of the people I've met.
How did you do? You got into the world of hedge funds. I read about non-ironically in the Wall Street Journal complimenting you for your research on the hedge funds. I noticed the Wall Street Journal didn't write the article on your research on the Greyhound, but we'll get to that. So did you consciously do that to get into this character?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. No. I knew I'd be working with hedge funds. So... And I have a very cool friend who is a financial reporter, and she introduced me to a bunch of these guys. And the nice thing was that many of them knew my work and were very friendly. In fact, let me into their lives, you know. Now, that may have created some kind of self-selecting bias, so you don't get the real sort of bros, although I met a lot of bros on the way as well. But there was a feeling of, I am meeting people as, intellectual and sensitive as you're going to get in this world. In fact, many of them... their backgrounds were sort of PhDs in math or physics and stuff like that. They weren't exactly, Wharton MBAs like our president do.
Do you have any thoughts on the concept of privilege as we as a society define it?
We think it's great. We're obsessed with money. We think more so than other parts of compared to Europe, for example. I mean, it's the sole barometer of someone's worth in this country, and I grew up poor and being poor was a moral failing, basically, seen as such by everyone around me.
Even for your parents who had to flee a country?
No, I'm talking about the people, the Americans around us.
Right.
And I think that Trump got elected because he's a billionaire in so many ways, And
except maybe the actual literal
except
way.
The actual literal way. Yeah, exactly, exactly. And there were, and there were people on the Greyhound. There was one man who was, I believe, disabled and mentally disabled. And he told me he was voting for Trump. And I said, why? And he said... Because he's got the best and the brightest around him. He kind of spurted it out. He's got the best and the brightest. And he's a billionaire, And I think that is, that we value success in business so much, but the success in business often does not translate into success elsewhere. And Barry at one point wants to start a urban watch fund. He's a watch collector. So he wants to start a fund for, urban disadvantaged youth where everyone gets a Rolex, right? And that may sound stupid, but, when I'm hanging out with these guys and they all have many of them have these political ideas, and sometimes it really, they actually work at, charter schools and all that. How different is that really from what Barry's trying to do? They think that because they're succeeded in this very esoteric world, they can make it successful in real life.
Yeah. And they'll ask a question, does it scale? And they fail to realize that the populations they're dealing with aren't exactly everyone they hired, which are quants from MIT
exactly.
And Princeton. Hey, if I manage to get this guy who graduated eighth in his class at MIT to produce on a superb level, why not an inner city kid?
Yeah. No, there's this huge, and it really, I was talking to a woman who was, I would guess, late 20s, and she worked for a very big bank, and she was talking about Occupy, and she said, I had to step over them on the way to work, and I didn't like it. And if only they knew how hard I worked. They were just there sleeping on the pavement. But I get up at 4 a.m. and I head to the office, and I work sometimes 20-hour days. If they knew how hard I worked, and it was this great sort of, working hard is the excuse for everything because I work so hard, I can do anything. There's no moral culpability,
Yes. The reason I asked about privilege, what I think I meant is I think a lot of people maybe would get a description of your main character and write him off as having privilege, as if there can't... Well, not so much that there can't be dimension, but that as if that said more about him than anything else in the world. And I don't think you have that attitude.
No, and it's interesting. You know, I mean, one thing that that connects me to people like Barry is, first of all, he's lower middle class. I grew up, I guess, mostly lower middle class than maybe middle. But he's from Queens, you know, which I am and which our dear president is. You know, so all these, and he's a striver, you know. And when I think of people like when I had to base a character, I kept thinking to the people I met when I went to Stuyvesant High School. Mm-hmm. I went to a Stuy reunion recently. Of course, gazillions of those people that work in finance, you know, some more successful than others. But that feeling of fighting for the, you know, the tiniest percentage of your GPA, the same way that you're now fighting for the tiniest basis points on your Bloomberg terminal, you know, there's a real connection. That's why I felt like I could write about this guy, because I know how sad it is. You know, you keep wanting approval. You're doing all this for your parents' approval. Your parents will never approve. It's this giant conundrum, you know. I kept asking this one guy, you know, so what do you think this other guy's problem is? And he said, his mom never loved him. You know, it was that simple.
Yeah. All right. The last thing I want to talk about is the name itself. Lake Success, real name. We grew up in a similar time, in a similar place. And I was also fascinated and compelled by the name Lake Success. And I would always hear it. Would you? One of the local radio stations has its transmitter in Lake Success. Uh-huh. And the tag would be blah, 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 broadcasting at. And then they'd say Lake Success. And I would always wonder. I understand towns have aspirational names. Sure. And also names that are divorced from what they mean, like Garden City, right. Town on Long Island. But think about it. A Garden City? Yeah. Is this a Babylonia? No, yeah. They play lacrosse there. Whatever. But the idea of the lake being correlated to not Lake Successful, Lake Success.
Success. Yeah, success.
Fascinating.
It is fascinating. Look, don't forget that the Great Gatsby took place in those neck of the woods, a little bit further up in probably, I guess, Port Washington and Great Neck, maybe.
Yep.
But absolutely that. And we, you know, when we started our American journey in Kew Gardens, and we sort of...
Kew, which is, I think people in New York will not know, is spelled K-E-W.
K-E-W, exactly. Not Kew, yeah. And so we kept, you know, and we almost got to the Long Island border. Little Neck was at the very, very edge. It was right there. And that was a whole different world. Great Neck would be the next town, and then and Lake Success would be, you know, directly there. And I remember hearing that word, and just Lake Success conjures up just yachts and, you know, all kinds of yachty stuff and wasps yachting along. And it really was a kind of giant symbol. And Barry also, his father lives in Little Neck. And they're just, you know, it's like you're just there. The promised land is literally the next yard over, but you can't quite make it there.
Well, as we've learned, those are actually, it's something named Lake Success would not have yachts. What people with the yachts would do is call their mansion a cottage.
Right, right. Exactly.
They always downplay it.
They always downplay
it. I went to school in Cambridge.
Right.
Whereas Lake Success, or a mall like Green Acres, which is like the number one mall to get your car stolen from. Another geographical place that I always thought was overly aspirational, Mount Freedom, New Jersey.
Mount Freedom. I didn't even know about that.
You didn't know about Mount Freedom?
No. Wow. I would like to climb that mountain one day, but it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah. I enjoy Mount Freedom. And then there's another town in New Jersey, and I think this is just a coincidence, but a lot of the Orthodox Jewish businessmen vacation there, and it's called Deal. I love that.
Deal, New Jersey.
Yeah, have you heard of Deal?
No, I've never heard of Deal, but I love it.
Between Deal and Mount Freedom, I think you might have your next book.
Yeah, Mount Freedom. Mount Freedom is a great title for a book.
Gary Steingart is the author of Lake Success, his newest, his latest, his greatest, his lakest. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by The Jordan Harbinger Show. You've heard me talk about The Jordan Harbinger Show because it's one of my favorites. He does in-depth interviews with some of the world's most fascinating minds. I can name a few: Barbara Boxer, Anderson Cooper, Michael McFaul, the Ukraine or Russia ambassador talking about Ukraine. One I recently listened to was Stanley McChrystal, the general, the former general, and he told an interesting story about revering Robert E. Lee. But then, after having a portrait of him for 40 years, he's a 63-year-old man, throwing it in the trash. Because his wife says, you know, what that picture and that man means to you, it doesn't mean to other people, and you have to understand that. And then in the interview, they got around to the point where McChrystal talked about that interview in Rolling Stone magazine that pretty much ended his career, where it got to the desk of Barack Obama, and it had McChrystal saying, unflattering things about the war effort and just how he talked to his wife and how they decided not to be bitter and not to wallow in it. He could have taken some shots at the process, the reporter, or the president at that point, but he didn't. It was just an overall good interview. It was facilitated by Jordan's excellent interview style. Whether Jordan is conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you will find something useful that can apply to your own life in every single episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way or discovering a little mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, like the first three letters, and hard, B-I-N-G-E, as in how you'll want to catch up on all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And now the spiel in Jade Vaginal Egg News. Yes, the Jade Vaginal Egg beat never stops. You give us 22 vaginas, we'll give you some eggs. So Gwyneth Paltrow, her health lifestyle slash mystical healing tent Goop, has had to pay $145,000 to California state prosecutors over claims that a jade egg for the vagina that it was marketing did not do for the vagina what Goop said it was supposed to do. Let me read from the Goop website describing some of the properties of this egg. One, working with a jade egg is more than just putting a stone up your vagina. But to be clear, it is putting a stone up your vagina, which the state of California, we should say, does not regulate, unless Brett Kavanaugh. Okay, but California officials took issue, not with the selling of vaginal eggs, not with the fact that some people would want to tell you that vaginal eggs are the next greatest thing since vaginal pancakes, not the fact that some people like to put eggs in their vaginas. It was the unsubstantiated claims on the Goop site that they made about the benefits of inserting the stone into the vagina, which is how King Arthur came to lead the land. Goop also didn't offer any disclaimers. They didn't say, you know, just the pro forma, your vagina may differ, or eggs and vaginas may feel larger than they appear, or people allergic to vaginal jade eggs should not use vaginal jade eggs. Even a simple, now to be clear, your vagina may already have eggs and why do you need another one up there? Even that was not said, and that caused concerns among state prosecutors. Now, you're saying as you're listening to my coverage of jade vaginal eggs, back off, Mike. You know, you're not above hearing the news of Gwyneth Paltrow's settlement with the state of California over undocumented claims that were made about the benefits of the jade vagina egg. But you say I'm reveling in it too much. Okay, I will back off. I found this coverage is provided by Bloomberg, and they have the story read in a much more detached. In fact, it's a robot AI voice. Let them tell you what happened.
Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop pays $145,000 over jade vaginal egg claims. Goop Incorporated, the lifestyle company founded by Oscar-winning actress Gwyneth Paltrow, agreed to pay $145,000 to settle allegations it made unscientific claims about the benefits of three products. The case involved Goop's jade egg, a $66 item inserted into vaginas to enhance sexual energy, the rose quartz egg, a similar product, and Interjudge flower essence blend, a tincture.
Is that worse? Isn't that worse to hear from that computer guy? I think so. So cool, so undetached, unlike the properly used jade vaginal egg. I prefer the tabloid style for this story. Headline, CA's DA's negs eggs, or hoo-ha brouhaha. California annoyed at vaginal spheroid. Golden State regs strike vaginal eggs. Is Gwyneth finished over claims this eggle beat a keggle? Okay. I've had my bit of fun here. I take no pleasure in such tomfoolery. You should know. I just do this because I'm a newsman. This is serious business. While the egg is the product that Goop was marketing that drew the most attention, can't understand why, and while they were fined, there is a more serious point to the Gwyneth Paltrow empire of healing. And it's this. It's bullshit. The gist is against bullshit. You know that. If you want to engage in harmless bullshit, that's fine. I will even allow that some of the bullshit you're engaging in may one day turn out to be useful. Perhaps manure for a fertile field of growth and enlightenment. But a lot of it just isn't that. There's a group called Truth in Advertising, and they brought, it wasn't a lawsuit, but they brought attention to Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop practices. I'll read from some of their letter to the board that eventually, I'll read from some of their letter that touched off this entire investigation. TINI, truthinadvertising.org, has cataloged a sampling of more than 50 instances where the company, Goop, claims, either expressly or implicitly, that products can treat, cure, prevent, and then they list a lot of stuff. Like carnelian crystals said to treat infertility, or grounding, which is walking barefoot outdoors or indoors using one of several Goop-promoted Everything Gear products, and they say that this can cure insomnia. Goop's jade eggs, these are the ones we're talking about, can prevent uterine prolapse. Goop's essential oils can, quote, help tremendously with chronic issues from anxiety and depression to migraines. Psychology is real. Psychology is powerful. The placebo effect is a documented phenomenon. There really is a mind-body connection. And if these products give some people some comfort, I suppose there is no harm. On the other hand, if you have depression, treat your depression. Don't rub some ointment on yourself. There's a direct line to this way of magical thinking to the anti-vax movement. And that hurts my kid and your kid, and not just Gwyneth's kids, apple and potato. One of those may be inaccurate. But there is also a line, a less direct line, but a line, in believing in benign nonsense of a self-healing sort to believing in malignant nonsense of a self-harming sort or an other-harming sort. So don't take the great fun that we've all had over this one egg for anything less than a condemnation of the whole omelet that is Gwyneth Paltrow's empire of feminine flimflammery. And that's it for today's show that just was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Daniel Schrader. Collectively, they are known by the adjective Bienna Schradavial. Steve Lickteig, executive producer of Slate Podcasts, does his job with Lickteiitude. The Gist, like Shavian, to refer to Bernard Shaw, we change the pronunciation a little bit. And when we really hit our stride, we say we're sounding positively just a various. Un peru de peru du peru, and thanks for listening.